hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars, big fights, and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the real life, I'm fighting in the talking dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They learn our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country halls, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fighting dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you're running down my country, man. You're walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Here's an interesting take on by Alana Mercer. Now, Alana Mercer is a South African, born journalist and blogger, and she's quite perceptive observer of the racial front. And this column of hers is about Kyle Rittenhouse. He's the 17-year-old who shot three people, killed two of them. These are Antifa. Two of them were Jewish radicals who were rioting. One of these people had a handgun. One tried to hit him when he was down on the ground, that's Kyle Rittenhouse, with a skateboard. He was chased and attacked by a mob of Antifa in Kenosha. And in self-defense, he shot and killed two of them. And, excuse me. He has, of course, since been demonized as the very worst sort of vigilante. But there is, of course, another side of the story, and undoubtedly what his lawyers will be pleading when this case finally reaches trial is self-defense. And I thought this was a rather perceptive commentary on Kyle by Alana Mercer. So I'm going to read that to you. It's called Kyle Goes to Kenosha, A Folk Hero Is Born. having done an about face against rioting, the sanctimonious Don Lemon, that's the half-Negro at CNN, giggled and smirked his way through a segment about white racist suburbanites, who imagine any decent rioter would bother with their ugly abodes. "Hey, racist, there is no Gucci merchandise where you bunk down," taunted the CNN silly man. Desperate suddenly to appear on the side of normies, the Fourth Estate is currently yearning for a Sister Souljah moment. Sister Souljah had expressed sympathy for the 1992 L.A. rioters. "If only black people would turn to killing whites instead of each other," lamented the eponymous rapper. If only black people would kill whites instead of each other. Did her career implode? No, of course not. Back then, Bill Clinton, a master politician and a conservative by the standards of Democrats today, diffused her weasel words. Candidate Clinton called the rapper a racist as bad as David Duke. As a master of triangulation, he managed at once to appease whites, who mattered back then, without alienating black Americans. And unlike Anderson Cooper, Bill Clinton felt your pain. I think she's being a little tongue-in-cheek there. But beyond the puzzled look on Cooper's bewildered face, as he is told by an ordinary working American what it means to use your life's work to louts and looters, the silver-haired Mr. Cooper, also a CNN celebrity anchor, is the son of heiress Gloria Vanderbilt. He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Private property owners defending their modest residences and meager businesses is not something someone who grew up in a castle can comprehend. Also, although Alana doesn't say this, he's also a homosexual. Anyway, just by way of knowing. Not so Kyle Rittenhouse. Young Kyle went to Kenosha, Wisconsin, because he was never confused. He attempted to do the job politicians and police have refused to do. As the city's mayor and state's governor watched Kenosha burn, Kyle confronted the enemies of the Commonweal. Unlike the men of the media and in corridors of power, the 17-year-old rose to the challenge, firing only when he was prone and being pounded by the feral fiends. Yeah, he didn't go out randomly shooting Antifa, as appealing as that prospect might be. He fired in self-defense. Intent on doing a Nick Sandman on Rittenhouse, the media hounds have been pounding the airwaves with the right-wing vigilante pejorative, also calling Kyle a 17-year-old man. This is a subliminal message for charge him as an adult. Consequently, GoFundMe, a crowdfunding portal, removed efforts on Kyle's behalf, directing visitors instead to the campaigns of the man he killed in self-defense. Get that again. Consequently, GoFundMe, you know, another one of these Silicon Valley public portals, widely used by people with all sorts of causes to raise money. What did they do? Removed efforts of those who were supporting Kyle trying to raise money for a defense fund, and directed them instead to the campaigns of the man he killed in self-defense. The one had a history of domestic violence. The other was a registered sex offender. These are the Antifa who were violent. For his part, Jacob Blake, whose shooting unleashed the Kenosha Peace Parade, had sexually assaulted a woman and was being intercepted for violating a restraining order against his victim. This Jacob Blake, sad as it is that the man would be shot six times in the back. Not only was he not a saint, and I certainly would agree, is being safe from violence it should not depend on your sainthood, but there's strong reason to believe there's more to the story, as Paul Harvey used to say. Even the New York Times Visual Investigations Unit provided a blow-by-blow account of young Rittenhouse being hunted by fellows who were foaming and fulminating about the need to cranium Kyle. This is 100% self-defense, seconds Kyle's attorney. To cranium means to smash him in the head, with the very likely result that he'd be killed. 17-year-old Kyle's recent history, working as a community lifeguard. Boy, can he swim in polluted waters, cleaning defaced storefronts, extinguishing dumpster fires lit by Democratic detritus, and standing sentinel in front of storefronts in downtown Kenosha. Actions the local police had instructed him to cease. Actions the local police should have been doing. But President Trump is a fierce brawler. He knows that the only time you reach across the aisle to the current crop of pyromania-enabling Democrats is to grab them by the proverbial throat. With the president in the lead, I hazard 50% of the country is behind this remarkably composed young man. Never Trumpers are with the new and radicalized Democratic coalition. Currently, energetic attempts are underway by the media, a fifth column, really, to frame murder, mayhem, and riot across American cities as Trump's doing. Now, Trump isn't out there in the streets, or his followers, looting, burning, night after night after night. Not even Democrat voters, vested in law and order like everyone else, believe that Trump tweets and patriotic convoys of his flag-waving supporters are destroying Seattle, Portland, Kenosha, Oakland, Minneapolis, Chicago, Albuquerque, Denver, Berkeley, Harrisburg, and so on. In particular, a malevolently dissembling media accused Trump supporters of causing the conflagration in anarcho-Portland, which, with mayoral imprimatur, has adopted non-permanent rioting status. Why so? Because patriotic prayer, a dangerous pro-God group, dared venture into Sin City. Didn't the flag-waving faithful know that those with God and law and order on their minds were not welcome? That Mayor Ted Wheeler had consecrated the city for criminals alone? Wheeler has turned Portland into a sanctuary city for the kind of rabble that is reducing American cities to rubble. An enabler of the Portland riots, you have to know that Mayor Wheeler has allowed criminals to homestead his city. As Scott Jones, sheriff in Sacramento County, California, put it, these rioters are idiots. They have no coherent platform other than to destroy. They don't know what they want. They must be met with force. Unlike Wheeler, Sheriff Jones would not be letting rioters gain a foothold on his turf. Lo and behold, Portland's Wheeler is now calling on the violence to cease and for unity to prevail. After a member of Patriotic Prayer was murdered by one of Wheeler's proteges, and that murderer has now been shot and killed by police, it seems the mayor and his police force intend to succor the man who allegedly executed Patriotic Prayer's Aaron J. Danielson. The killer, clearly visible on the short circuit TV, is still on the lam, though a man who says he's 100% Antifa reportedly is under investigation. And this column was written before a federal, not the local police task force, hunted him down, and he was killed. One fractious group, Black Lives Matter, and its white hangers-on, is the beneficiary of light-touch policing. The other group for Trump and law and order gets heavy-handed policing for daring to safeguard American civilizational markers, statues, and storefronts, all symbolic of a history and a work ethic once shared. Indeed, where are the charges against these bands of roving violent outlaws for ongoing aggravated assault, arson, and for crossing state lines in furtherance of their criminal activity? Only 300 arrests have been made nationwide. A mere 75 have been charged federally. By Chad Wolf's telling, he is acting Homeland Security Secretary, 100 of those are in Portland. Given the magnitude of the destruction, this is not law enforcement. Amid the chaos, some pettifoggers have found the wherewithal to throw a book at Kyle Rittenhouse and Steve Baca of Albuquerque, New Mexico. He too was chased down by a wilding pack, ran until he could no longer, and only then stood his ground. Why is Baca being prosecuted and destroyed rather than given the keys to the city? T. Jefferson, hush, don't say a founding father name out loud, passed the 1807 Insurrection Act. It was good enough for him. It's good enough for me. Bring it. Still better, tired of waiting on a neutral, co-opted, infiltrated, and compromised police to come to the rescue? Let law-abiding taxpayers hire private protection of Kyle Rittenhouse's caliber. A great column by Alana, and on failed policing, here is something that I noticed the other night. There was an incident, and I did mention it, and for my faithful listeners, I want to be quite upfront. At around 2 o'clock on, I believe it was Thursday morning, Friday morning, word came down that there'd been a horrific shooting in Oshawa, Ontario. That's a city just about 30 miles east of Toronto. It'd been a big hub for auto manufacturing. Anyway, the word was that there was a shooting in one house, and I believe 4 people were killed. Later we would learn that it would be the husband and 2 children of the couple that lived there. The wife, we would later learn, had been injured, wounded, and a 4th person had committed suicide. So it was a murder-suicide. And I complained at the time about the lack of details. In fact, to this day, the police are still not releasing the name of the family, although neighbors, it's now out in the community. Anyway, I suggested, I thought this was another case of black gangs. I want to say I'm wrong. It was a tragic, very unusual circumstance that a family member, as yet unspecified as to how he was in the family, had driven all the way from Winnipeg, Manitoba to Oshawa and had shot and intended to kill the whole family. Shot and killed the husband, shot and killed 2 of the two teenage children, wounded the wife, and then turned the gun on himself. Another child is away at university. So the wounded mother and the unwounded young adult who's at university are the sole members of the family who survived. The 2 parents were described as teachers, dedicated, loved in their job, respected in the neighborhood, quiet people, and all that. Okay, I have speculated, especially because of the pervasive police silence, that this was another case of a black gang. I was wrong. I'm glad to say I was wrong. Okay. Fast forward to now what we do know, and it's almost worse. Apparently, neighbors at 2 a.m. heard a noise and heard screams. Some were unclear as to whether what they heard were gunshots, but anyway, police were called. Police arrived, and police sat outside the house. Shots fired. Shots were being fired. The murderer was rampaging through the place, killing people. And the police sat there. Then they sat there. Why? Well, they were waiting for the strategic response unit, the armored guys with guns and all the rest of it, with special guns, the tactical unit. And by the time the tactical unit did get there, the shooting was all over, and 4 people were dead, and 1 wounded. And as this began to dawn on the community, or I should say, as this information began to circulate and dawn on the community, people asked questions. I asked questions. Were the police out there doing what is in bureaucracies monitoring the situation? Which means sitting on their fat duffs doing nothing. Emblazoned on the side of their police cruisers is the motto, to serve and protect. Who was being served? Who was being protected? Good question. They're good questions. A man by the name of Mark Mendelsohn, he's a former Metropolitan Toronto Police homicide investigator. He's now retired, but he's the so-called consultant for talk radio station 1010 in Toronto. Well, Mendelsohn was asked these questions the next day. And I thought his alibis for these cops were particularly sobering, let's say. He said, well, police don't know what they're getting into. They could be walking into a trap. So they have to hold back until the more specially trained people are there. They have to assess the situation. They have to find out if it's a domestic dispute. Find out what's happening. And they do that by sitting in the car while the shots continue. I thought, wow. We're always told, especially in Canada, where the authorities hate the notion of people defending themselves. We're told, if there's an incident, call 911. And the theory is that the police will come over lickety-split and they'll deal with it. So don't take take the law into your own hands. Leave it up to the police and they'll take care of it. And part of the phony baloney social contract in Canada is a good deal of the ownership of guns has been vacuumed away from us on the understanding that if there's a problem, call the cops. Okay, as a theory, I can't disagree with that. Most of us are not especially trained to deal with armed people. A few of us are, but most are not. Yes, it would be better, ideally, to leave that type of thing to the trained professionals. I've always disagreed with this phony social contract for several reasons. One, even in the best of circumstances, the police are not always there. If someone is trying to jimmy my door right now and come through to do me harm, well, of course I will try to call 911. But they may not get here in time. Police may not get here in time. I may still have to in some way deal with it myself. So the reason for permitting weapon ownership, or I should say rather than permitting it, recognizing it as a fundamental right is this. If you agree that we have the right to life and personal security, and those are God-given rights, they're not given to us by the state, then it would also follow that we should have the right, not the privilege, to the means to protect those rights. And in our current society, that for most people means guns. Okay. Anyway. But a key part of the social contract is that the police will deal with violent situations. What didn't happen? Dutiful neighbors called them. Apparently, reasonably quickly, the police showed up because the gunfire was still going on, and they sat there, in quotation marks, monitoring the situation. Keeping out of harm's way, you might say, even though they, in the words of the country and western song, had a big irons on their hip. As Ricky Ricardo in the old I Love Lucy show used to say when his exasperating zany wife used to do something really crazy, he would say, Lucy, you've got some spleening to do. Well, the police have some spleening to do. They are paid the big bucks. The average police constable in the Metropolitan Toronto area earns over $100,000 a year. That's not chump change. They earn that because they pledge themselves to serve and protect. Which means, as we're always being told by pro-police people, and I'm somewhat neutral, but they put their lives on the line. I would agree. Well, why didn't they? Now, there might be a reasonable discussion over tactics. perhaps there might be an alternative to just barreling through the front door with a gun drawn. I can understand the need to acquire information and intelligence, but I do not understand the response of those people, those officers who were on the scene while the shooting was still going on, to remain on the scene. Who was being shot? It would be a more than reasonable assumption that the people being shot were innocent people inside. That would be a very reasonable assumption. The shots did not appear to be coming out at the police. And so the lack of action is absolutely shocking and bolsters those of us who have long argued against most gun control. It bolsters our argument that basically the state something we all have to do, those of us who believe in freedom, is to stand behind the Australians, the Australian freedom fighters. Australia has slipped into the pathetic ranks of a police state, a medical Stalinist police state, with the police absolutely out of control. I want to thank my good freedom-loving friend Baman Yazdan for sending this my way, and it's a report that I've also put on our website, and our being the Canadian Association for Free Expression, and this refers to protests that occurred in a number of Australian cities on Saturday. In these reports, you will see unarmed men and women being arrested for simply protesting the lockdown. You will see massive police presence, the mounted cavalry, the mounted cavalry turned on Australian citizens. This is the sort of scene that you would expect in communist North Korea. A woman being smashed to the ground by the police. You see her sprawling on the pavement. She wasn't fighting, she wasn't armed, she wasn't resisting, she was just beaten. And what breaks my heart is to see this being done by white men. Yep, ordinary, decent-looking, white Australian, mostly men, some females, but our own people unleashing this repression on others, on our own people. This is lockdown violence, a report from Australia. Absolutely shocking. If you would like to see it in full, just go to our website. That's cafe.nfshost.com. cafe.nfshost.com, or email me and I'll send you the link. And my email is very simple. It's paul@paulfromm.com. That's paul@paulfromm.com. My first attempt to play this has not worked out very well. So I'm going to call it up for you. We'll just have to take a minute here. And it really is, it is shocking to think that this is happening in a relatively developed white country, that people have allowed their rights to be handed over basically to the Stalinists. And we'll see if we can get it this way.
The first.
Here we are.
Congratulations. Congratulations to the Andrews government in Victoria.
That's the state of Victoria.
State. You guys are now world famous. You've smashed it. Around the globe, around 7 million people so far have watched the video showing your police force, your proud police force, handcuffing and arresting a pregnant woman, Zoe Buller, in her pajamas at home, in front of her children, simply for posting on Facebook an advertisement for a protest in the rural city of Ballarat, a protest against Victoria's cruel lockdown laws.
What's this?
Yeah, she's pregnant, so... What's this about? How can you arrest her? That's... Can't you just say to her, take the post down? Like, come on.
And now to the bad news for the government, the reaction overseas, I'll get to the reaction here in a second, including what Zoe Buller herself said today. The reaction overseas is actually generally of shock, horror. In Britain, pregnant mum in pyjamas arrested in front of kids over anti-lockdown Facebook post. Even Russia's RT network, funded by the authoritarian Russian regime itself, is shocked, and these guys are used to KGB tactics. Australia should be ashamed and appalled by this video of police handcuffing a pregnant woman for posting an anti-lockdown message. And in the United States, more media coverage of this astonishing story, including a warning from a prominent conservative TV host, Laura Ingraham. This is what's coming in Joe Biden's America. Pregnant woman arrested in Ballarat for creating an anti-lockdown protest event on Facebook. So the world is watching this arrest and going, wow, really? But here is something bizarre. Frankly, it's unbelievable. 7 million people around the world are watching, but there is one man who says he is not. One man who says he has not watched the video is a man whose police actually did the handcuffing under this same man's extreme emergency powers law. His police, his law, but Premier Daniel Andrews says, I didn't watch it.
I've seen the vision. I don't know what, I'm not sure any of us know what she was attempting to incite, allegedly.
Do you believe she's telling the truth? You can text me, I'll take a little straw poll. Anyone who thinks Daniel, or make it easier for me, anyone who thinks Daniel Andrews didn't see the video, please text me. In fact, we do, despite what Daniel Andrews was saying, know exactly what Zoe Buller was attempting to diligently say right here in the Facebook page, a protest in Ballarat against these lockdown laws. A protest with face masks and social distancing, quite responsible, but Premier didn't know that. It turns out there was another thing he didn't know. Why were his police so heavy-handed with a woman who simply posted about a protest against the government and its laws, when that very same police force would not arrest a single person at Melbourne's huge Black Lives Matter protest earlier this year? In fact, here's the irony. Police in Ballarat even bent the knee to the cause. What a coincidence. Police in Ballarat bowed to a legal protest of the left, but now a woman organising a protest against Daniel Andrews in that same city gets arrested in her gym jams. Why the different treatment? Again, the Premier didn't know.
Do you think it's heavy-handed? Members of the Black Lives Matter protest have been charged with incitement, given that they were also planning a protest at a time when we were under restrictions and 10,000 people attended?
I would need to refer you to Victoria Police in relation to what occurred with those people.
Okay, so the watchers are horrified, but now to the reaction here. police wanted to scare the bejesus out of people, scare them out of protesting against these terrible bans, they sure succeeded. At least with Zoe herself. She now faces jail. Here she is this morning.
You know, they said they weren't really happy about having to arrest me or anything, but that's what's happening at the moment in our state. So
what was your reason for putting up the post and wanting to do the silent protest?
Well, for one, I actually, sorry about my bimbo moment, I didn't realise that I wasn't allowed to. and I did kind of want to protest in Melbourne, but obviously I knew I wasn't allowed to do that. So I just wanted to feel like I was doing something, you know, standing up for human rights. And, you know, I'm just a passionate person and I'm sick of the lockdowns, I'm sick of hearing about suicides. I personally lost my job, you know, and just sick of watching the economy collapse. It gets to the point where, I wanted to peaceful protest and I don't want anyone going to jail or anyone getting hurt or, you know, anything like that. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and encourage protesting. It's sad though, I wish I could. But, you know, I don't want to encourage it and then watch people be hurt, you know, if they do go and protest, if there's forceful arrests and stuff like that. So I don't even know. It's such just so emotional, like, I'm just baffled.
Would you still go and protest if you could?
No, I'm too scared now. And it's fear-mongering. That's how I feel.
It's just a woman out in the country, lost her job. Says she has a bimbo moment. Name me a politician that has said so much about this assault on human rights, about people like her have lost their jobs, about the economy crashing, and needed to say something about it. A politician should learn a lesson from this woman instead of sending the police to arrest her. And talking about scaring people, some people decided to scare Zoe's brother with death threats when he set up a GoFundMe appeal to pay his sister's legal costs. That sure worked. He's now so scared that he's taken down that GoFundMe page. So his mum, who was going to come on the show tonight, now says, oh, she'd better not. Do you know, we say, someone's Dictator Dan, and it's a police state, and I tell you what, it's starting to look like a reign of terror to some people. And unfortunately, many Victorians seem perfectly fine with that, particularly if they worked on the ABC.
Hello, that's Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
I guess it's because politicians and journalists have trained themselves, or have trained these people, to think this virus is much, much worse than it really is. I mean, it's serious. But they're making it sound like it's a plague will come back and we're all going to die, even the little kids are going to die. And that these brutal bans are the only way to fight it, which is complete rubbish. Leading academics, professors, doctors say, no, it's not. This is ridiculous. It's disproportionate. By the way, Victoria today recorded 113 new infections and 15 deaths. It's the deaths, for me, that actually is the most important measure. You don't crash an economy and you don't put 500,000 people out of work just to save some young people from the sniffles. The 15 deaths. 7 of people in their 80s, 8 in their 90s, all but 1 in aged care. Once again, have I said this almost every night since March? It is now screaming at people, surely this is a virus that almost exclusively kills the old and the sick. Protect them. Don't lock up everyone else at this horrific cost. That's what Zoe's protest was meant to be about. These bans are far too crude and totally disproportionate, which makes me wonder if they are in fact even lawful. Because these bans, those police, came under a state of emergency law that is supposed to be for the purposes, says a report to Parliament, the purpose of eliminating or reducing the serious risk to public health. And you tell me, what was the serious risk posed by a protest in Ballarat where there are just four people in the entire city who are sick. And what's more, a protest in the open air, where there's very little chance of infection, in the open air with face masks on and social distancing. Risk about zero. But the Premier wouldn't accept that reality today.
Well, what if 1.5 metres isn't maintained? What if one person isn't wearing a mask? What if someone's not wearing their mask properly? Like, all of these things, they're unacceptable risks. There are rules. We're not going to change those rules. Protests are not smart, they're not safe, and they're not lawful.
What do the police say?
Well, probably says the man speaking without a mask. Well, if social distancing isn't maintained, let the police then arrest that person. But now there's argument. Oh, the protest is unlawful, because it's unlawful. So don't you dare hold even a safe protest against that or anything else.
The rules in Victoria are that it is not the time to protest. You don't need to protest.
You don't need to protest.
Is the Taylor Dan overseeing an administration which has got everything to protest against? You just need to obey.
And that's pretty powerful. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. We're going to take my musical break right now. And I'm going to play a man who, songs by Buck Owens, a man who brought the California Bakersfield sound, sometimes called the Buckersfield sound, after him, Buck Owens, to Nashville in the 1960s. He was a mainstay for years on the very popular TV program called Hee Haw. The man from Bakersfield, Buck Owens. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Love's gonna live here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before. Say you don't know me, but you don't like me. Say you care less hard for you. But how many of you listen to judge me? And walk the streets of Bakersfield. Hey, you don't know me, but you don't like me. Say you care less hard for you. on my every dream come true. And my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees. And best to know your mind until the end of time makes my heart skip a beat. Together again.
Just as long as you love me.
Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, and I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com.
In days of yore from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf.